I'm Lena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding Sequest.
Happy New Year
to one and all.
Except people who use other calendars. But you know what? You're used to it. You heard it from everyone else, not just us.
Yeah, we're not the only ones. It's what it is.
But yes, it is a brand new year, and I figured it is our duty, our responsibility as a Sequest-based show to, with a new year, completely reinvent ourselves.
Oh.
Have a totally different tone and focus.
Yeah, you know. Okay. Yeah. So what's your focus going to be?
So I'm thinking year two, we're just completely factual and dry.
Oh, God.
No jokes allowed. I don't know what you're going to do on the show. This face you're making is saying, well, if I don't have anything factual to say, I won't say anything at all. You're saying it with silence.
I don't know what else to say. I don't know what to do.
Well, we could become an interview-based show.
Oh.
Yeah, we can find Don Franklin.
Oh!
I hear he at least at one point lived in Chicago, so we can do some detective work.
We can bug him.
Maybe that's what it is. It's like a true crime podcast, but the crime is the disappearance of Don Franklin, a guy who hasn't actually disappeared. He's still working.
Where in the world is Don Franklin?
that could be our year two focus.
Yeah, and I just sing that every episode. You definitely want to come on our show.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's what I'm singing.
Is there a how-to angle? Like how to make a
Sequest?
How to make a Sequest. How to make a major network primetime science fiction show in the mid-90s.
Oh.
You know, for you in your own home.
Yeah, you know. What?
One of those weekend backyard projects.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you want us to, like, come up with concepts for sci-fi shows and, like, pitch them? That's what our podcast becomes. We just pitch the sci-fi show.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's lots of kinds of podcasts we could become year two.
There are. You know what I'm just going three. With? I'm becoming a nose ring person instead of a nose stud. Reinventing myself that way.
Yeah.
It's very involved.
It's so involved, it kept us from recording for 3 weeks.
It's so involved, you were like, is that new? Or was that been there a while?
The lighting conditions were...
Am I supposed to say that's new?
Look, I noticed it immediately. Let the record show.
I might not have had that like a week, and I just missed it.
Anyhow, we are here to talk about... Sequest 2032, Season 3, Episode 9, Resurrection.
How you're just changing the subject.
I'm maintaining a flow. I'm keeping up a pace. Resurrection, written by Lee Goldberg and William Radkin, back from Smoke on the Water and Chains of Command.
Avoiding the question.
Directed by Oscar El Costo, who directed Spindrift and Smoke on the Water. We are approaching the end of Sequest.
Yeah.
From here on out, it's the final four.
Yeah.
And you can tell because this is the final Sequest credit for all three of the men I just mentioned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's also out of order.
No. How can you tell?
Oh, there's some obvious things.
So we start in a flashback, not just a flashback, but recycled footage. Max Scully walks on the beach next to a very skinny whale skeleton.
That is so clean and white.
As you will hear us previously describe in our episode on Whale Song. It cuts from that to the cruise ship strike, the accidental sinking of a bunch of tourists when he was aiming for whalers.
Yes.
What was that cruise like? Over on the starboard side, if you look out your windows, you're going to see some illegal whalers right now. There's a bunch of blood churning up in the ocean. Y'all paid good money to see that.
Yeah, you think they would maybe like, oh, we're gonna detour a little bit. We'll be getting to port about 30 minutes late. Can't tell you why. We're just gonna go around. Yeah, but you know what?
Like distracting your kid from like the dead deer on the side in a road trip.
But it's fine. No one was alive to leave a bad review about the blood in the water.
Yelp was untouched.
Well, maybe their family members took care of that later, but, you know.
So, from there we see, the whole cruise ship strike play out, but newly edited to cut around Peter DeLuise's previous Sequest character before he was Deckwood.
Yeah, no one gets to know that. Never mind! You saw nothing.
Gonna sweep that one under the rug. Might have been some ADR happening to, yeah.
No, it's just that dude, his twin brother, had, like, you know, like, how you, like, donate, like, plasma for money? He had, like, donated his genes for some,
to the research. Frankenstein man that got murdered that one time.
Yeah, and then they were like, oh, okay, we're gonna use this dude with this really round face to be our model.
Because simple shapes are easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why he looks like him.
Maybe that guy's uncle was the Frankenstein guy that got murdered.
Maybe.
And so he just modeled him on his godson / nephew.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, after a little flashback there, we cut to the present with our buddy, Scully. Mm-hmm.
Max Scully is back. I think it's interesting that the cold open flashback, like, hey, this happened 2 years ago. You're going to want to remember this. Doesn't include his final confrontation with Bridger, where Bridger, like, lets him go, then reports him dead anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It obviously happened. He's here, not dead.
Yeah.
There he is with his snazzy new suit and beard.
But we don't need to know that. That's not important.
It's fine.
Instead, we have a very grumpy Tim and Ford.
Yes. They are shuttling him around because he is a very important person. A VIP, if you will.
Yes.
He is ambassador of the Ectopia colony, an ecologically pure settlement, and the latest member of the United Earth Oceans.
They so don't like this. They are so mad about this.
They're so grumpy that this guy that, you know, they did firefights against and stuff. He put their lives in severe danger that one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, now they're his chauffeurs.
Yeah. So they're driving around looking at some ground where...
With very important algae.
Yeah, well, it had very important algae before some mining company got rid of it all when they were mining. And this algae, this area was the only natural source of the algae that could cure glaucoma.
So now we all just have to smoke weed instead. Ugh.
So we find out all this stuff about him. And, again, very grumpy. And, you know, Tim is like, well, how does a guy like him get a pardon? And Ford's like, well, you know, you kill one person, you're a murderer. You kill a few hundred, you're a statesman.
Interesting words from the future president of the United States of America, Jonathan Ford.
Who are you gonna go kill, buddy?
Oh, he's got a list and he's checking it twice. So
they get fired on before anything can continue.
Whoa! Out of nowhere, the shuttle starts firing on their shuttle.
Yes, and the shuttle radios them that they are there for Scully. And, that's a really, familiar voice.
You think so?
I think.
Oh, okay.
We'll see in a second. But don't worry, it's fine that we're being fired upon and that these people are there to try to kidnap him because they're within Sequest's range. Mm-hmm. So it's all going to be okay.
So Hudson immediately fires the grapnel torpedo and just scoops him up.
I love how often they're like, grappling hook! It's like their favorite tool.
This is a really poorly thought out plan from their attacker, who we see aboard Sequest. It is the double X almost Mrs. Hudson back again.
Yes.
Elaine Morse has returned to the program.
Yes.
No flashback. You're just supposed to remember her.
Yes. I feel like the grappling torpedo is the, VR probe of the past.
The new HR probe is the grapnel torpedo.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
sure.
That's what I think. It's our favorite tool.
I'm wondering if Smoke on the Water had a really positive reaction. And so they decided, hey, get those guys back and get them to write another Elaine Morse episode. Because, I mean, in this era of television, that's what the turnaround was.
They could see a rating and review and like...
And someone said, oh, well, it must be this element. Do that again.
Yeah.
That happened in season two. That's why there's a long string of episodes that all have a giant monster in them.
Yes.
There was an episode with a giant monster, got a ratings bump. And sure, that might have been because they had a football lead in for once. But
we're going to write five more of them just in case.
But the studio is like, you need to put a monster in. Put a monster in. This one needs a big monster.
Yeah. Yeah. So back on the Sequest after the credits, opening credits, Hudson is in the launch bay, you know, having some people arrested, taken down, welcomes Ambassador Scully on board, and Scully goes to shake his hand, and he's just like, no. I have to welcome you, but I'm not doing that. So Ensign Walenchek here will show you to your room.
He gets a tour. He does not get a jumpsuit.
No. We don't do jumpsuits anymore.
We're not doing all the season one callbacks. We're just having Max Scully and giving a tour.
Yes. And he also orders Ford to escort his ex-wife to his office.
But for a stern talking to. Don't get any ideas.
Yeah.
We're not hearing a third set of wedding bells to not finish ringing.
So, she shows up and he's like, what the fuck? You tried to attack him.
That's against the law. You're supposed to be a constable.
And she's like, there's a warrant out for him. It's fine. Like, no. He was pardoned. Not by Japan. They got a warrant. They want him. I'm getting him.
Because there were 50 Japanese citizens on that cruise ship of 300 that he murdered that one time.
Yes. And she has quit her job as a constable within the UEO and is no longer has ties to the UEO. Instead, she is working directly for Japan, as basically a bounty hunter.
Yeah, that's what Hudson calls her. She calls herself a private consultant.
Yes. And she says that she cannot work for the UEO. She's not a part of the UEO. She cannot support people who, you know, pardon a mass murderer and, you know, bend over backwards, basically, for him.
Scully gets under her skin. This is a red line, and it is worth resigning her career over to get this guy.
Mm-hmm. Hudson decides to, like, make a statement about, like, commitments and how, like, he's committed to the UEO and she should be committed to her job. And she's like, oh, don't talk to me about commitment, Mr. Man who left me at the altar twice.
That's why we don't get a flashback. That's all you need. It's in like the eighth minute of the episode.
They were married.
Almost.
Almost. They were fiancéed.
They were double fiancéed.
Meanwhile, Lucas is giving his tour and is like talking about the aqua tubes like you do and how, you know, Darwin should have access to their world and, you know, Bridger's philosophy.
It's a direct quote from Bridger on those lines.
Yes.
And Darwin's actually in the tube. So rare these days. I like Max Scully just chuckling approvingly at seeing Darwin swim by in the tube.
Well, he cute.
If this was season one, Darwin would heal his soul in the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd show him the center of the universe and feed him a fish.
He'd change his ways.
And he'd be like, ah, yes, I should go garden. And not be an evil person.
But he does have a garden. He has a great big garden called Ecotopia.
Yeah, we'll learn more about that later.
Lucas is a great big fan of Ecotopia. He loves it.
Yeah, so Scully is like, you don't like me a lot, do you? And he's like, oh, I don't know you. No, sure you do. You were on Sequest back when.
You know, like, back when.
Back when. And you've been, like, downloading, like, everything you can about, like, my colony. And Lucas is like, oh, well, you know, I do think that it could be a model for all future colonies. And it's very interesting and a great theory about how things could be done. And Scully's like, that wasn't an answer. No,
bye.
Let's keep going. Tour this way. You definitely don't get a jumpsuit. We actually have them in stock now, but I'm not going to give you one because you're a fucking asshole.
Those things, you know, there's an item cost, and whose budget is it going to come out of? Not mine. No.
murderers don't get jumpsuits.
Murderers don't get jumpsuits.
Of the Sequest. They should get jumpsuits.
Maybe that. Maybe our year two pivot is to being really merch driven. And we just sell t-shirts to say murderers don't get jumpsuits.
Sequest jumpsuits. Back in Hudson's office, he is currently trying to draft a message to Brody's family to inform them he died.
As a reminder, if you were watching this in your home in 1996, you would not have seen the episode where Brody dies yet.
Nope. That wouldn't have happened yet.
From your perspective, no.
Was that the last? That wasn't the was that
no,
the
No, that was several,
like,
episodes
several
ago.
Episodes ago, right?
He's really dragging his feet on this one.
I'm just like, how?
They told Bridger before they told his family.
That's what I'm thinking of. Like, that was, like, multiple episodes ago.
Look, if
did the Bridger episode happen then before this one, too, in, like, actual, like, airing?
It because... aired that way, yes.
So the public has heard it twice.
Yes.
Before it actually fucking happened.
Yes. The question is, at this point, who is Brody's family? Did his mom wake up? Is she out and about again?
Well, and so who did, he lived with, like, his grandparents or, like, an aunt and uncle growing up?
I think he was raised by an aunt and uncle.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sponsored and mentored by that guy who totally sucks and he died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like... if the mom is still on
who
ice...
was introduced back in Whale Song, actually, to tie it all together a little bit.
Aunt and uncle?
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
It's been 10 years. They're really getting up there, you know.
Maybe still alive, aunt and uncle?
There's just some second cousins that are about to get a very heartfelt message from a guy they don't know about a guy they've never met.
Yes.
Just put it on Brody's future Facebook wall on the internet.
So, Tony knocks and interrupts Hudson trying to figure out these words, and he's kind of like, thank fucking God. Because let me put this off longer. No one needs to know. How about we just go with no one needs to know Brody died? It's fine. Tony's like, hey! Heard the list for new lieutenant positions went up. How'd I do?
And Tony Piccolo did not pass the exam. His exam score did not get him one of those positions.
Yes.
And while he's breaking the news, Hudson's already talking about how he'll do better next time. This is not an invitation. It's just expected. Tony will take this test again the same way the sun will rise tomorrow. We all know this.
Yeah. And Tony's like, what? What? No, I don't think I will. And he's like, no, you will.
Yeah.
You're going to do this.
He's discouraged. No matter how much the captain is talking about, well, look how much you learned this time. You'll be an even stronger footing next time.
And in the meantime, you are now a warrant officer.
He gets a field promotion. He earned it. He deserves it.
And his first job is to go clean out Brody's room.
Yeah.
That really fucking sucks. Also, why has no one done this yet?
Why is this drawer full of panties? And also this one. And oh my God, also this one. Brody, you freak.
Yeah. Yeah. So meanwhile, on the bridge, Lucas is continuing his tour. I don't know why this dude needs to see the bridge.
He's a visiting dignitary. He's ambassador of the newest UEO member state.
You know what? This would be a space, though, that I would make the executive decision he's not gonna visit.
Oh, yeah, this security concerns, you know.
This and, like,
the torpedo rooms.
There's just certain ones that are off limits.
The fire control room next to the torpedo room.
Yeah.
You show him the dolphin, you show him the tubes, you show him the gym. That's the tour. That's the whole tour.
Yep. The mess. There you go. That's all you need.
No, he can order in. He doesn't get to see that.
He doesn't get to eat with anyone. He can only get room service. He is complimenting the boat, though, and like, oh, Bridger built a really great boat. He did a good job. This is very nice.
Comparing their dreams, Bridger's dream of making just the greatest possible deep submergence vehicle and his dream of saving the whales.
But then, you know, talk of killing people comes up.
Yeah, it's too bad. We both had to kill so many people in pursuit of our dreams.
And Lucas is like, well, Captain Bridger wasn't a murderer. Oh, so he never, like, shot a torpedo again after he shot one at me? Like, totally didn't? And like, well, no, he didn't, like...
That was to save people all those other times. And he's like, yeah, that's what I said, too, about whales, though.
Well, at least Bridger never missed that bad. Say.
And this whole time, Henderson is, like, sitting in the big chair.
Yeah.
It's her watch, I guess.
Well, yeah, because Ford's, like, busy, like, escorting Elaine around.
And
Brody's dead.
Brody's dead.
So she's next in line.
She is Helmswoman Henderson, after all. Yeah, sure. Okay, do it from the big chair. Why not?
And so while this conversation is going on, Scully sneakily puts a device.
You say sneakily, and no one notices.
Yeah.
But in a way that makes them all seem like Mr. Magoo.
They're all idiots and blind.
It makes a thunk noise.
And it beeps and it flashes.
And like, okay, it's on the underside of the like control panel in the captain's seat. That's not hidden. It like faces out into the world.
But no one's facing that way. It's fine.
Sure. It's hidden. It's very, very sneaky. Very stealthy. Good job. Sure.
And downloads some data or whatever, and then he like thunks it off again. No one notices.
No one notices. He might as well just, like, fake cough to cover up the thunk.
He doesn't need a fake cough. They're all too distracted by him being a murderer.
That's true. That's what the conversation continues to be about.
Mm-hmm. So later, Hudson has met up with Lucas and is like, hey, what's your impression of Scully?
We should mention that before we cut away from this is when Scully first mentions the 300 screams he hears whenever he shuts his eyes.
Yes.
Yes.
That comes up a few times.
He, oh boy, he's tortured by his past.
But also thinks it's totally fine. Like, in the same sentences.
He's moving past it. He's trying his best to move past it. He's using it as motivation to refocus his dream to make a better, more eco-friendly world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, later,
mm-hmm.
Hudson meets up with Lucas and asks him his impression of Scully.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucas totally dodges this question by just talking about Ecotopia.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Horrible name, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah. Ecotopia is a, like, exhibit at Epcot that everyone forgot. That's not a real... Don't name your place that. You don't want to write that on an envelope for your address. No.
Care of Ecotopia.
No.
And so, yeah, he talks about how, like, oh, it's impressive, and, you know, what he's developed is, you know... interesting, and like
it's strange that he says all these things when later he will visit
mm-hmm.
and get his own tour in return mm-hmm.
yes
where he seems to be learning how this place works for the first time. What was it, all those files you downloaded? What are you talking about?
I'm not sure what he read.
But whatever it was, he's impressed.
Yes. And Hudson, though, was like, stop dodging the question. I asked you what you thought of him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And comes out, you know, just unforgivable what he did,
mm-hmm.
But that he thinks it's noble what he's trying to do now.
And so Hudson says, all right, you're so interested in the place and you think this guy's so noble, go take a look. I'm sending you for a week of observation in Ecotopia. You want to see how it works? Really see how it works.
Hudson loves to, like, ground Lucas. His way of grounding Lucas.
All right, you're on the super train, kid.
Yeah, it's just to send him on field trips. Bridger was like, no, you don't get to, like, go to that party or see your friends. And Hudson's like, get off my boat.
Yeah. You're going to go to the party and you're going to give me a 14-page report on the social dynamics of the American teenager.
I know you like being here too much. Go. Think about what you did. So he takes a launch over, and he's now at Ecotopia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
this is a state park.
It is.
This is just, I don't know where they filmed it, but I feel in my heart, this is a Florida state park.
It's just a Florida state park. And so Scully is giving him the tour the state park. And Lucas is like, wow, this is the best artificial light I've ever seen. It's just Florida.
Occasionally, when the camera points up, they do digitally paint in a big roofed dome.
Yeah.
Because this is an undersea colony. But yeah, generally you don't have to because it's a state park.
I love that though.
Yeah. Because
it really is, it is just outside where a lot of the other ones they've gone to, like you could tell they were in like greenhouses or something. And I'm like, well, we have to say this to let people know. We're not just freaking outside.
So they go to the Ecotopia Orange Grove, and we learn that the concept of Ecotopia is not to have large, intensive farm operations like your hydroponics colonies, but to do dirt farming and be a model to the world of if we return all of humanity to small agricultural communities and end multinational supply chains, everyone will rely much more directly on the local ecology, on the web of life, and therefore a new consciousness will bloom across humanity. It's so easy to just end all global commerce.
Yeah. Everyone wants that. It's totally fine.
He's got a bit of an uphill battle, Ambassador Scully, let's say.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to go over very well with, like, Dion and Bourne, but sure.
He's some sort of, like, anarcho-primitivist, but without the anarcho part. He definitely believes in a strong central government of him and his one-gloved hand.
And after, like, his whole spiel, he's like, you still don't like me, do you? He cares so much what this, like, 20-year-old thinks of him.
And if you think that weird old scientists of dubious morality just trying to win the favor of a teenager is interesting, you should go listen to the Chain of Memories Let's Play. We've reached the second campaign that follows Riku in Castle Oblivion, and oh boy, that's what the whole thing's about.
And when Lucas is like, no, I really don't, he's like, well, I'm trying to make the world a better place. Can you say that about yourself?
Every single day when you go to bed, blah, 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 300 screams, etc. I do computers.
I love that this middle-aged dude is so caught up with what this 20-year-old thinks of him. I just want you to like me and think I'm cool.
I keep having to fix O'Neill's like laptop because he downloads all these toolbars and it's really fucking things up.
And Brody downloaded too much porn, but now he's dead, so like I can't yell at him about it.
I could just throw his laptop out the airlock. No one cares.
So back on the Sequest, they get transmission that there's a radiation leak at the Freedom Point dump. Right? It's like a dump.
It's a nuclear plant, I thought.
Yeah, nuclear plant.
Yeah.
Or something.
They have a big old nuclear pile somewhere, and there's a leak. Oh, no! Oh, no!
Yep. So they're like, oh, we gotta go there and help.
I do like that this episode is premised on the idea that now that Lucas is an older, more complicated man, he requires an older, more complicated-er man to possibly imprint on again.
Yeah.
We are once again going to the season one well of what kind of guy is Lucas going to be? Who's his role model? And like, I don't know, Mr. Murder guy, but he's also a world-leading ecologist now?
Here's the thing, is never in this episode do I think Lucas is being like won over by this man.
But he does love Ecotopia, blah, bad name, all the way to the end. He loves it so much.
He loves the concept of what it is. He does not like this man. He does not want to be this man. No. He has no, like, I think it's such a stretch, actually, of, like, making Lucas say that he finds what this guy is doing to be noble. Because I'm like, but you hate him. And you, like, say that multiple times.
All the time.
You can find his work to be impressive, but that doesn't make him a good person. I mean,
it's not running on, like, refugee slave labor, like if he was a Macronesian ecotopist.
True.
So, there's something.
That we know of.
That we know of.
Mm. Sequest is going off to do their thing. A shuttle with fertilizer is coming into Ecotopia. And oh, who's that? Oh, that's Elaine.
Undercover Morse. Oh,
she's coming in as a fertilizer hauler person.
First question, where's that fertilizer coming from, Scully? You hypocrite. That looks like commerce to me. Make your own fertilizer. Poop on your plants. Like a real man.
They don't have cows.
I don't know everything about the character of Maximilian Scully, but I assume he defecates. Do it yourself. Go now.
I do feel like that should have been a part of their, like, fully, like...
Yeah, that's the last step on the tour. Like, you have to contribute to the farm.
And then we will turn it into fertilizer, and it will then grow the food you eat.
Lucas, you ever see that classic film from many years ago, The Martian, here in 2032?
So Constable Morris starts sneaking around, and meanwhile, Lucas is trying to pick oranges from the tree, except they call them oranges. Those look strangely like apples.
I think he just gets a really weird color. I think the one he grabs is not ripe.
No, it's not. It's almost like Lucas has never seen a ripe orange in his life, except he has. They have those on the Sequest.
Those are fake synth oranges, if you listen to Creek. But also, it is important to note that Elaine Morse has found a dude scanner.
Oh, yeah.
She sees a dude getting scanned in the dude scanner.
Oh, yes. 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 That's important to know.
But yeah, Lucas is having the experience of a guy who goes to farm camp and really loves it. This is his first taste of non-alienated physical labor. And it's an honest life. It's a true life. He's about to go right on Walden Orange Grove about it.
Yeah.
But he ain't never going to make quota at the rate he's going. Come on, my guy. You're collapsing the colony. Let's pick up the pace.
Yeah. He's having a great time, but geez, dude, move faster. He's using one of those, like, fruit pickers on a stick.
It's a fun little tool. You put the orange in the basket and then there's little claws and you just yank it down and it plucks the orange. Yeah.
Scully comes by to check in on him, then leaves. And as Lucas is like smiling at picking his oranges or apples, whatever they are, he like looks over and sees someone pull a gun on Scully through the grove. And rushes over and, with his big stick.
And bonks the gun out of her hand with the orange grabber stick.
And then grabs the gun and points it at her and is like, oh shit, it's Hudson's almost wife. Fuck.
Oh no, his double X almost wife. Oh no.
Hello, almost Mrs. Hudson.
Times
Morris,
two.
Would you hyphenate?
Did you almost hyphenate?
Would you make him take your name? I always wanted to ask this, but...
And now that I have the gun, I can. I want to note, one of these harvesters in an uncredited role is Ray Buffer. He has had many uncredited roles across Sequest Seasons 2 and 3. He's been one of McGath's aide a number of times, and is also one of the fight pit guys in Chains of Command.
Yeah. So the Sequest is 4 hours away from Freedom Point.
To stop this radiation leak.
Yes. They are going fast, and Henderson's like, you know, if we keep going like this, it's going to make our core unstable. And they're like, but if we don't get there, people are going to be eating fish with a Geiger counter. It's going to be bad. We got to get there. We're going to get there.
And so they talk about how the UEO promised there would never be a nuclear disaster in the ocean. And that, you know, this Freedom Point facility would last a million years. And so future United States President Jonathan Ford says, never trust a politician. And this gets the approval of the captain.
Yes. Then they are interrupted because Ecotopia is calling. And Scully is like, hey, your almost wife tried to kidnap me again. Come get her.
He does not call her that, but yes, he does say that. Ex-Constable Morse.
And Ford's like, I'll go. And Hudson's like, nope, it's my problem. She's my responsibility. Apparently forever. Hate my choices.
You know, you think when you leave someone at the altar, you're done with them, especially after you do it a second time.
But no.
But no.
They're your problem. So Hudson arrives and is like, yo, I'm arresting you for kidnapping.
Finds her held in a garden shed.
Yes.
This place is just a park.
It's just a park.
It's a park and a control room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which we haven't seen yet.
But Scully comes in and is like, no, I'm not pressing charges because I'm very noble.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Your computer boy might have mentioned
it. I'm noble. Yeah, yeah. Please love me.
If I were a gas, I'd be argon.
And the reason that Scully is not pressing charges is mm-hmm. he's like, you know, she's just obsessed with me, considering we were ex-lovers. Like, how many ex-lovers have you stalked at this point? Like, Captain, you should be so lucky that you never got involved with her. Okay, bye!
Bye! What an insane thing to say! This lady keeps trying to kidnap me because we dated for a while. What?
She's obsessed with
and
me.
And I'm not pressing charges. That's when you press double charges, you freak.
I gotta go try to win over the 20-year-old boy. Make him like me. It's not weird at all.
Captain, thanks for coming out, but we're all just going to keep this under the rug. By the way, I totally hit that. Bye! You freak! You freak boy!
What I love is that his whole line about, like, oh, you're so lucky you didn't get involved with her. I'm like, he totally knows! There's no way this man does not know.
This is a matter of public record.
This man is obsessive. There's no way he didn't, like, stalk them in Vegas.
So the whole stalking thing is projection. He's been stalking Elaine Morse all this time.
Yes.
While sometimes pretending to be dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back on the Sequest, Tony's like, hey, Henderson, look at this video of a woman.
Yeah, look at this little hologram puck he got from a lady.
So this was a disc he found in Brody's room. And this woman is like, hey, so, like, no, we haven't talked in a long time because, like, we broke up and then you disappeared for 10 years.
You know, because, like, of the aliens.
But, like, my mom died, and it made me, like, realize how important family is. So here's your son.
He's about 10 years old now.
I don't want money or anything. I just thought you might want to meet him sometime. Okay, bye.
I love when the time skip changes lives. I wish this happened when Brody was still around.
Right?
I want him to meet this kid.
Right?
Yes. I want Brody to meet his 9.5-year-old son.
Well, and right after this video plays, like, Henderson and Tony talk through this whole thing of, like, oh my god, did Brody meet him? Does she know that Brody's dead? Like, mm-hmm. Brody never tell us we were his friends, etc.
Makes you wonder how much we know about anybody, huh? Says Tony Piccolo.
I would have loved an episode where Brody found this out and then we did see him, for whatever reason, make a choice to not tell people.
Yeah, yeah. You can see it as, like, a character-based B-plot. We just keep cutting to Brody on shore leave that he really, really got, like, had to ask for hard from Hudson, but without saying why. And he just, like, went on a limb, like, I trust you, Lieutenant. Okay, but be back in 2 weeks or whatever. And he has this big emotional journey with his son, and he comes back to the ship, and he makes a very pointed effort to just say, oh, hey, Jim, what happened out there? He's like, oh, nothing much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been cool.
Yeah. Or, like, it could have been... They could have also done it as him not saying anything and him trying to get shore leave and also wrestling with the fact of, does he want to meet him or not?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it could be a whole internal thing of, like, you know, he didn't really have parents in, like, his life, and he doesn't know how to do this, and, like, should he? Would it make sense? Like, would it bring anything to the kid's life, right? And, like, his whole, like, internal battle. And maybe it would have been, he decided, yes, next shore leave, I'm going to meet him, and then he dies.
But on the other hand, somewhere out there, this 9-year-old has a grandma younger than his mom.
Yes. Yes,
there's that too.
There is that. She's out somewhere in a tube, out of a tube. I don't know.
So yeah, so they have this very like serious scene here of where they're struggling with.
When the video message started playing, I thought, wait a minute, is that Brody's mom? Yes. She's so tiny on the desk hologram. It could be. No, it's not his mom.
It's not. It's not
his mom. It's another lady he slept with.
Yeah. So the Sequest gets to Freedom Point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're trying to figure out the source of this radiation leak. Back on Ecotopia, Scully and some dudes in the control room are watching the Sequest get there. And he pops a little disc in and they're like, boom, we now have control of the Sequest.
Scully has seized Sequest systems like so many terrorists before him. There's a few banks of techie desks.
Yeah.
But the color scheme of this room is like...
puke?
I was going to say like a Boy Scout uniform is sort of happening.
Yeah, puke.
The bottom half is khaki and the top half is an olive green up on the walls.
Yeah, puke.
Very strange.
Boy Scout uniforms are not good colors. They're really bad.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're really awful colors. The only good one is, like, the Venture Crew green.
You would say that.
Well, yes, because I was in a Venture Crew. Yeah. But it's a good green. It's nice. It's deep. It's rich.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm some of those things.
Deep?
I go for deep.
You go for deep.
As a wide receiver, yes. Yeah.
Go for the deep cuts.
As a meat carver, yes. Yes, I do.
I was going for the jokes, because I never get them. So the Sequest is having energy fluctuations, and it's not from the radiation. Their controls are shut down. Their communications are shut down.
The lights go out. In the end, the only system working on the bridge is the alarm that's constantly going off.
Yeah. Things aren't good.
Yeah.
So Henderson runs down to engineering, and everyone's freaking out trying to figure out what's going on. And it's all because of Scully. So... Hudson is on a shuttle back to the Sequest
with Morse.
And as they are driving, he's Elaine. Like, okay, hand it over. She's like, what? The pistol that's in your boot. Like, it's always fucking there. Give it to me. She's like, fine, here you go.
Getting her wedding dress altered for that was probably the biggest challenge in planning.
Why would you have to get it altered? It was just in the boot. You can access that.
It's a really big gun, though.
It's really. So more than just a little pistol.
Yeah.
She has a whole, like, rifle up there.
It's a bazooka.
Obviously,
it's a bazooka. It's a shoulder-mounted RPG.
No, she's just really good at picking her guns on her outfit.
Mm,
so if it's
coordination,
not poofy enough, she's not taking that gun. Mm-hmm, the more poof, the bigger the gun.
Yeah, she is a walking arsenal in winter.
So then they argue a lot, and she goes off at him that, oh yeah, I would kidnap and commit this crime and risk my entire life because he's an ex-lover. Really? You think that much of me?
And I do like to imagine Hudson thinking, well, if that were true, she'd do it double for me, and that hasn't happened yet, so...
She gives us some background.
Yes. They met and became lovers when they were in the Green Brigade together.
Yes.
And this seems like the point of Max Scully's life when he was known to Bridger.
Yeah.
Which suggests that Bridger knew Elaine Morse.
Yes.
But yeah, they were in whatever this Green Brigade is together. Sounds like a militant eco group.
Yeah.
But while they were, you know, on missions and fighting the good fight together, they broke up once Scully started talking about murdering the boards of directors of the companies they were campaigning against.
Yeah, she didn't really like that. She knew he was serious. And so...
Anyway, Mobile Suit Gundam Hathaway 2 is coming this year.
And so she's like, yeah, I don't buy that he's building Ecotopia for, like, any good reason. Mm-hmm, like, that man is evil, and he is gonna kill people, and that's why I'm doing this.
He has a dark, evil soul. Don't trust him.
And she's like, and what's your gut say, Hudson?
It says he wishes he had real oranges instead of those weird synth fruits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I can't really do anything without any evidence. So, like, I don't know about that. I hate the guy. I do. Let's say that. I hate him. But evidence.
Meanwhile, Lonnie Henderson is very sweaty and fiddling with so many switches.
And having no luck.
No, it's bad in there.
Yeah. The fusion core is unstabilized and they can't fix it. And it's going to blow them all up.
So, hey, remember a few weeks ago when we're like, hey, what exactly does the Sequest do for power?
Fusion core.
They got a fusion core. They have a fusion reactor on board, and we get to see the core for the first time just before it explodes.
Yes. but then this problem is interrupted by a whole new problem. Suddenly the ship is firing on Freedom Point, and they have no control over it.
There is a continuous high-power laser blast coming from their laser cannons to drill through Freedom Point into its nuclear pile. You know, the one they're meant to repair.
Yeah. And then, like, 43 minutes, it's gonna go, and it's gonna take them with it, and that's gonna be, like, a really big nuclear explosion. It's gonna be really bad.
That is the stakes of the episode as we go into commercial. And when we come back, Henderson has a plan for one of their smaller problems.
Yes. So the maglev has an independent power field, so she's gonna redirect that to the core for a while, which will give them, like, maybe an hour before it explodes. But they're all gonna be unconscious by then because they won't have oxygen.
And it doesn't do anything to, get them helm control or,
communications
or stop the laser.
Yeah.
Can we have Dagwood just get out and push the Sequest to point the laser in a harmless direction?
Could Tony go? So they do completely, like, realize that someone has control of the Sequest. They throw that in there. They're not like, oh my gosh, the Sequest is just fritzing out on its own. No. They know someone has control. But they don't know what to do to stop this. And Freddy's like, well, we could blow ourselves up to stop the laser.
In her second line of the episode, I think.
Yeah.
Like, Lieutenant Fredericks does not have a plot, but whenever the team on Sequest is debating what to do, she is in that team now.
Yeah.
She's just there. Mm-hmm. And, like, so Piccolo has that, but also his Brody stuff. And O'Neill is in that too, but also had, you know, a part in the cold open. Freddy just has this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back at Ecotopia in the control room, Scully is, like, going off on his dude.
Yeah, his tech hacker man.
Yeah.
His pet Lucas is not as good as real Lucas.
Yes, because they didn't realize that diverting the power to the lasers was going to make the fusion field go.
Yeah, he didn't see that issue coming. He did not foresee that one. And so Scully is the one actually melting down.
Yes. Like, this wasn't quite what the plan was. We do want to blow up Freedom Point. We were, like, planning for the fusion core to go first and then blow stuff up. This isn't quite what we had planned.
I like that Ford and Scully have complete opposite problems.
Because
Ford's worried, well, if we blow ourselves up, it might set off Freedom Point. And Scully's like, well, if they blow up, they might not set off Freedom Point.
And we need it to be set off. And he's like, oh my god, there's only one person here that can save Sequest, and he's picking oranges.
Everyone needs the boy. We need the boy.
So Hudson's on a shuttle. They're almost to the Sequest. He's trying to radio them. They're not radioing them back. Mm-hmm. And Elaine's like, it's Scully. He's behind this.
Which does sound a little insane.
She's like, no, listen to me, Hudson. I saw men scanning stuff.
I saw the dude scanner. They had Geiger counters for some reason. What's the point of that on their, like, dirt farming ag colony? Their model village for a decentralized degrowth future.
Why do they have radiation? Think about it,
huh? Think about it, huh?
What's your gut telling you? And Hudson's all like, I never liked that son of a bitch. Let's go back. Because, yeah.
Yeah.
So on the SeaQuest, everyone is passed out.
And so sweaty.
Except for Dagwood, who is very sad.
He's very sad.
Meanwhile, at Ecotopia, Magath is talking to Lucas in the control room that they have not been able to contact the SeaQuest since they arrived at Freedom Point.
Mm-hmm.
And
he gives Lucas the requested permission to use the remote control emergency codes, kind of like that time when Lucas got catfished by Anarchist?
You're something?
Something?
I like, though, that Lucas is like, I need your permission, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's in the Navy now. He's got stripes. Yeah.
If he wasn't talking to Magath, he totally would do it. He wouldn't have gone through that. It was just I'm doing what I'm supposed to do.
I also love that he, because this is all a secret, like, Scully has not opened up to him what really happened. So he has to ask for the actual codes to do what the guy next to him did with a sneaky little computer disk half an hour ago.
Thing is, you see, like, he doesn't actually, like, ask for the codes. He just immediately is like, oh, Perrin! Which makes me think he already had them, like, typed in, but then Magath called and he was like, oh, yes, sir, can I, use the codes?
Well, he knew he'd say yes. He's just saving time. Time is of the essence.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't ask permission, ask for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But when he logs in, he immediately sees the series of faults that Scully's dude did. You know, the guy sitting 3 feet from him is like, oh, this is fucked up, man. I don't know what who did this. Oh. It's him. It's that guy. You're sharing coffee with him.
Everything's running at 10%, including the life support. This is really bad. The containment field is going to collapse in 10 minutes. What the fuck? Lucas is like, I can fix this, but not alone. And so he radios the SeaQuest, and Dagwood picks up.
He's just calling on a wing and a prayer on the hope that someone is conscious in this technically survivable but very bad situation.
Yes.
And it's Dagwood because Gelfs need less atmospheric oxygen to operate.
Yeah.
This is 2 season 2 continuity checks in a row in our season 1 returning character episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he tells Dagwood that he needs to go to the guidance system hatch of EMP torpedoes.
Basically, the idea is to open up one of these torpedoes and pull out a detonator and use that tiny EMP to kickstart the systems.
Yes.
Of course, he has to explain this step-by-step process to Dagwood, the one who I don't think can read.
He can read.
Can he disarm a bomb? We're about to find out.
If told how to, yes.
And you know what? That's true. He does a really good job.
Yes, and he has to put it as close to the fusion core as possible, which means opening the door and, like, getting close, and then push the red button and get out of there in 5 seconds, or he dies.
But, like, as smoothly as this goes, I think it is undeniable that part of the tension of the scene is, oh no, it's Dagwood, the one who has something like a developmental disability that we never talk about.
Yeah.
That's where the tension is coming from in the scene.
Yeah, he's innocent, and yeah. You're also asking him to do something really dangerous.
It's really dangerous.
Really
yes,
dangerous.
Yes.
Protect him at all costs.
This would be just as dangerous if O'Neill was doing it, but it'd be like, oh, the nerd is doing the technical thing. I'm not
it's
as
fine.
Worried. Yeah.
He'll be fine. That happens. And Lucas
dives out of the way as this EMP shockwave ripples through in a visual effect.
And of course, that cuts the PAL device he was using.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lucas can't talk with him anymore. So they don't actually know if, like, Dagwood's, like, okay.
They don't know if he's okay, but they know it worked. They're seeing the power readings as all the fail-safes kick on and restart the systems.
Yes, and Lucas is, you know, putting everything back up to the levels he should. And, like, putting it back on autopilot.
Yeah, autopilot coordinates to bring it right back to them in Ecotopia. Yeah,
yeah,
perfect.
It'll be great.
And as soon as he leaves the room, Scully's like, okay, fuck those coordinates, turn the laser back on.
Yep. Keep doing what we're supposed to do.
Yeah,
you idiot. So Lucas goes to the launch bay, however, because Hudson called him ahead of mm-hmm. time, and he's like, hey, what's going on? Why couldn't you talk to me over the PAL?
Sorry, but I want to go back a little bit before this, before even the thing I said about Scully, like, re-commandeering the ship a second time. When Lucas congratulates Scully, Scully's like, oh, you saved the ship. And he's like, no, I couldn't have done it without your quick thinking of coming to get me and then, like, patching me, like, you know, the credit for saving all these lives lies with you.
The credit lies with Dagwood. You might be Dagwood. Dead right now. Yeah. It's only Dagwood. But sure.
But yes, the sweet, naive boy, like, shakes his hand. And yeah, as soon as his back is turned, Scully's like, okay, use him to explode the nuclear pile. Go, go, go.
So as Hudson gets off the shuttle and Lucas is like, why couldn't you just tell me what was going on? He's like, oh, because Scully's behind all this and mm-hmm. is trying to, like, blow up the Sequest and Freedom Point. And he's like, no, he just saved them. And Scully appears with many armed dudes and is like, nah, I'm actually trying to blow it up.
I'm going to explode the largest nuclear bomb in the world, and your Sequest is the trigger. Ah, cut to commercial. Learn about toothpaste and car insurance.
And when we come back, Scully's venting.
Yeah.
He's going on a long tangent.
I love, like, his opening statement for how he used to have, like, hope in humanity to change for the better, to evolve, to develop. But of course that was dashed. They accepted him. You can't trust idiots like that.
And Lucas is like, do you realize what this size nuclear explosion is going to do? And he's like, oh, what, a new ice age and eliminating all men from the Earth? I don't know.
Folks, let me tell you about a little movie called Mobile Suit Gundam Char's Counterattack.
Yeah,
it's happening. It's not, you know, crashing asteroids onto the surface. It's a gigantic undersea nuclear explosion. But it's the same thing. Does that make Lucas Quest? Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Does that make Hudson Amuro? Maybe Hudson is bright. I don't know.
I would prefer Hudson to be anyone else. Because I don't... Tim can be Amuro.
You know what? He can. And Henderson is Chan.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah, we learn Scully's plan. Yes, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We already knew it. But they learn it, is that, yes, he wants a new ice age. He wants to kill every human being on the planet. And Hudson's like, except for a few that will be here, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. part of this, is that the colony is going to survive. And you're going to have world genocide otherwise. And he's like... Yes, and the future generations of this colony that will walk the Earth will, you know, have grown up and learned how to not savage it and et cetera.
How to use the orange grabber basket. Yeah.
And he's like, and I know that they're going to banish me from this colony once they learn what I've done, and that's fine.
And he asks Lucas, do you think Moses didn't know that, like, Do you think Moses wasn't aware that he wouldn't live to see the Promised Land? And like, dude, yeah, of course Moses knew he wouldn't see the Promised Land. God told him directly in, like, clear spoken language. It's in the book. He super knew that. God told him.
We cut back to the Sequest to see that Dagwood did make it.
Mm-hmm.
He's alive. He's not dead.
And one of the great, like, sweet, aw, Dagwood moments is him, like, shaking his friend saying, wake up, I fixed Sequest.
Yeah.
It's really cute and good.
And he's trying to get his pal to work, and he's like, I fixed it, don't leave me, I'm here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Weird moment where he's, like, rubbing his head in his brother's hand.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think... that the actor was like, I'm gonna do the weirdest fucking thing to him and see if he can, like, get through the scene without breaking. And it's just, like, rubbing my bald head in his hand.
So he's talking to himself about being scared and alone, but he's not alone.
Because Darwin's there! Mm-hmm. Darwin pops up.
Dagwood have Darwin, Darwin says.
Yes, and they're together, and it's okay.
This would have been better if Darwin instead said, I'm not scared, I don't have that problem. Eat some fish, loser. Bye! You know, the way he usually approaches emotional problems.
I'm fine. It's okay. Darwin, just swim out of here. Go find other family. So back at Ecotopia in the control room, they are nearly to critical mass. And so Scully orders that they seal the colony.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the not slave labor that's going to be sealed in and become slave labor. Because they don't have a choice in this.
I think there's a difference between becoming a subsistence farmer because there's no other life available and being the de jure property of another person.
Okay, yes. But I do think it's like what we were talking about earlier about how like, oh, he's totally like, you know, these people are there by like choice and it's not like Macronesia. It's like doing their shit. And mm-hmm. I'm like, pretty soon though, things are going to get kind of fucked up for them. And none of them know it.
There is a Macronesia mention earlier in the episode that I don't think we talked about, where in the shuttle, when it's one of Hudson and Morse's one-on-one scenes, and she's talking about her crusade for what's right, he just turns to her and is like, I don't see you invading Macronesia. What is it about this guy? And then she goes into the story of their past in the Green Brigade.
So when Scully's, you know, talks about sealing the colony and it's time, and Lucas is like, oh, okay, so this is your plan to silence the 300 screams by killing 100 million more?
Are there 100 billion human beings in 2032, or does Lucas believe that at least some animals possess souls?
I don't know.
That is a crazy population curve.
Maybe he's just, like, exaggerating.
Like, less than 40 years in the future to that many where did they come from? How many Gelfs did they put in those tubes? My God!
There's a lot of people who just think they gotta keep pounding it out.
That's why they keep building all these undersea domes, just to have the square footage for them all. My God.
So Lucas kind of drills into Scully. Keeps going at him about this, though. Like, oh, yeah, you know, this is all of this making the world better. It's really going to, like, comfort the millions of dying children. Just, like, one thing after another after another. And Hudson and Morris use this as the perfect opportunity to, like, grab guns and start shooting.
It's when Scully just snaps and shouts at Lucas. He's shouting at the boy. Let's punch the guards.
Perfect. And then Lucas punches a guard too.
He does a pretty good left cross on that dude. Yeah,
he's been working on it.
Maybe it's a stage left cross. I'd have to watch again.
And then what I love is after they've like disabled everyone, Lucas moves to the control panel and just shoves the unconscious dead dude off to the side. Just like, get out of here.
He learned that one from new captain.
It's good. I like it. Just psh, unbothered.
So now they have a problem. They have a science problem, but Lucas doesn't know how to solve it because no one's ever had this science problem before.
And Hudson's like, well, make something up. And Lucas is like, Okay,
so if you want to control a nuclear reaction, you usually do that with graphite control rods. Where are we going to get more graphite than anyone's ever seen in their life?
And Morris is like, I know, I was in a graphite mining community, so let me just go track all the graphite ships in the ocean. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's one not too far away. Let's just commandeer it.
So they commandeer a hauler, and the pilot's like, yeah, okay.
And so on the Sequest, the life support is coming back up. People are waking up. Ford crawls to Henderson. Everyone's okay. Power's coming up. And they see that there is a hauler on the way. And
whenever we go back to Sequest at Freedom Point, there's like this exterior of the lasers firing into this ever widening hole that is glowing in the like distinctive electric blue of a nuclear reaction or stories of a nuclear reaction. And at this point, it looks like how they would render the face of God on a video toaster in 1996. It's so much and it's so bright.
At this point, the lasers are not firing. They've turned those off.
Yes.
Right? Everything's coming back up. But there's still this gaping hole. So Hudson radios to them to get the hell out of there. And that they are well aware of what's going on. But they're having issues because the autopilot will not engage. Him and Morris are just going to have to, like, steer this hauler directly into the opening.
Straight into hell, yeah!
And he's like, hey, Ford, be ready for our escape pod. We're really cutting it close. Not good here.
So as the hull of this hauler enters the gap, in a visual metaphor for coitus, a small, tiny escape sub shuttle just pops out the rear.
Yes. And the reaction is neutralizing. And of course, we have to send a grappling torpedo out to
grapnel them.
They're back on board.
And
Morris has to come to Hudson's room after all the, you know, excitement and, you know, all the reportings. It's like the next day or something. And Hudson's like, hey, McGath says this belongs to you. It's her
constable badge. Yeah.
And, you know, they're offering you a second chance. And she's like, I don't want it. It's like, well, you're a stubborn ass, Elaine.
Like, that's why you love me. That's why I couldn't live with you. Is this flirting? Is this what flirting is with these two? Maybe? Oh.
Can you imagine what their sex is like?
Oh, they don't even face each other. They just rub butts and something happens. I don't know.
Just gotta slap each other. She looks at him and she's like, you do look good in a uniform. Can't imagine you in anything else. Ugh. Like, walks off.
She walks away.
And he's like, it's hot.
So
it's fucking weird.
So now Tony Piccolo goes back to visit his tutor, Lonnie Henderson, to tell the news about, you know, the fruits of her labor, that he scored pretty well, but not well enough to get a lieutenant's commission.
He's like, I'm a warrant officer now.
But he's got a rank now anyway.
I'm just like, wait.
This didn't come up when you were cleaning up the room?
You didn't. You were like, hey, Henderson, because of my new job as warrant officer, I have to clean out Brody's room? That didn't come up.
I need help identifying all of his many soaps and body washes. Can you give me a hand with this?
Apparently he liked to collect vintage Axe body spray. I think we need a biohazmat suit.
He had an advent calendar of the stuff. Homemade. Personally assembled.
So, while Tony is sharing this news that he somehow did not share earlier, he also tells a family story that has her really confused. And he's like, well, in case I die, you're my friend, so you should know.
This is how he's dealing and suggesting perhaps other people deal with the knowledge of James Brody's secret life. We just shouldn't have so many secrets from people we count as our friends.
Yeah, so let me tell you the story about a bakery.
Let me tell you the story about the bakery and the smell, what the smell of grease and powdered sugar does to me.
Because I don't have a secret child that I know of.
That I know of. That's a secret to me, too.
So, back on the bridge.
It's time to just dot I's and cross T's. We're talking about the containment team coming up to really fix the situation.
Lucas is, you know, re-shielding the data link, so this can't happen again.
How many times, Lucas, how many times have people tried to hack this sub with some degree of success?
They normally hack it from off, like, from other ways. His little tricky device. Cut through whatever it was this time.
Incredibly stealthy, yeah.
And Hudson, of course, has to check in of like, so what do you think about this dude now?
And once again, he is noncommittal. He is a fence sitter. He is just as much an environmental zealot as
Max Scully at least claimed to be when he was being a world leader for a while. And so he hopes that his legacy is whatever Ecotopia turns out to be, rather than all of the many murders.
Other than his insanity.
That's how he says it. But yes. He means the many, many murders.
Yeah, yeah. The end!
The end!
Except it's not.
It's not?
Do you have a fish fact?
I've got a radiation fact.
Oh!
The International Atomic Energy Agency maintains a 7-point scale for describing radiological events.
Mm-hmm.
Only two events have ever been rated a 7 on that 7-point scale.
Mm-hmm.
The Chernobyl incident in 1986 and the Fukushima reactor incident mm-hmm. in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
The Chernobyl disaster is by far the most severe, causing an evacuation of over 110,000 people. It certainly killed dozens in the near term and likely thousands in the long term due to increased rates of illness. The response mobilized 500,000 people and is the costliest disaster in history. Cleanup of the reactor is ongoing and scheduled to conclude by the year 2065.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not a nuclear explosion like Max Scully tried to cause. That would be impossible.
Mm.
The Chernobyl reactor exploded due to a buildup of steam pressure in the coolant system that went pop and spread fissile material and contaminants all over the place, not a nuclear chain reaction. One of the reasons that is impossible is because weapons-grade uranium is 20 to 30 times more refined than that used in power plants.
Mm.
I mean, the long and short of it is that bombs are made to force a sudden runaway chain reaction. Reactors are designed to prevent that,
mm-hmm.
and rather have a very long-term, slow, and very, very controlled reaction. The differences in things like the arrangement of the fissile material, just the existence of cooling systems, and other safety features. If you were to try to force a power plant to become a fission bomb, one way or another, something else would pop first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, a massive buildup of steam pressure blowing the containment into the atmosphere, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Darling, have you got a fish fact?
I do. And it's about a fish.
Yay!
So the hagfish, also known as the slime eel.
Oh, come on.
Are eel-shaped jawless fish.
Uh-huh.
Hagfish are the only known living animals that have a skull but no vertebrae column.
Oh, okay. That's optional.
They are marine predators and scavengers, and they can defend themselves against other larger predators by releasing copious amounts of slime from mucus glands in their skin.
So that's just me during allergy season.
Pretty much.
I love you!
They are typically about 20 inches in length, though the longest one recorded was about 4 feet. They're elongated, eel-like bodies, and the skin is naked.
Well, yeah, fish don't wear pants. Well, it ain't SpongeBob out here.
They don't have scales.
Oh, that's what you mean. Okay.
And they cover the body like a loosely fitting sock. Their skin, like, only, like, attaches to their body along, like, one strip. So that's pretty gross.
Oh, no.
The slime that they, you know, can shoot out, it, like, expands, like, mm-hmm. in water, like, 10,000 times its original size.
Oh, it's just like those toy dinosaurs in a little capsule, and then it... Oh, yeah, my goodness yeah. gracious.
And what it does is it can get trapped in gills of predators and make them suffocate.
Oh,
that's,
fuck you, yeah, try to eat me.
Yeah, and that's why, like, they don't get attacked a lot. they also do this really weird thing where they, like, go clean up their slime.
Uh-huh.
And
because they're so conscientious, they're good neighbors.
Apparently, part of the process they think is because it helps them also clear their own, like, passages, and that they could possibly die from their own slime too.
I got a great trick. It only works once.
But yeah, they're really gross looking.
Mm-hmm. I bet they are.
They are. They're really nasty looking. I don't like them.
We found a fish you don't like. Amazing.
Yeah, they're pretty gross.
I got something else you don't like.
Yeah.
It's time to go to the Movie Star Minute.
Jesus.
This time in the Movie Star Minute, we are here to talk about 1991's Highlander 2, featuring Mr. Michael Ironside as General Katana.
Mm-hmm.
The main sword man villain.
Yes.
Of the Highlander 2, following in the footsteps of Clancy Brown as the villain of the far, far superior first film.
Mm-hmm.
But that does mean if you want to be featured in an Amblin Entertainment NBC series from the mid-90s,
mm-hmm.
you have to try to kill Connor McLeod with a sword.
Apparently.
Earth 2 fans, both of you, got your back.
Yeah.
Okay, all three of you, two listeners plus one host.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, okay.
Thanks. I know you don't really like it.
Uli.
Well, no one likes him.
The show's about him.
That's not what you watch. You watch for everyone else.
Highlander 2. Highlander 2 is famous for being one of the worst films of all time.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah?
It has some higher moments and a lot of lows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is important to note that we watched the current and final edition of Highlander 2. The director has been tinkering with this movie for the last 20 years or so.
He just wasn't happy with it. Thought it could be better.
Oh, with one of the worst movies of all time? Yeah. He thought it could be better.
He thought maybe if I add this scene back in, they'll like it.
Here's a quote from from a critic on the 2004 special edition, the one that's most easily available and we watched on Tubi, that I agree with. This is critic David Ryan, quote, "This is the best version of this film that the producers can make with the material they have on hand. It's still not a particularly good film. But it's infinitely superior to the original version. What was once a horrible, horrible film has become downright tolerable."
Oh, God. That's tolerable.
"And actually somewhat entertaining at times."
So, entertaining parts.
Uh-huh.
Michael Ironside.
Michael Ironside on that subway train. Good Lord.
He is a great villain.
He is
acting the shit up. Hate his hair.
He got kind of Denethor hair going on.
Yeah, he looks like he can be Elrond's brother.
But
like,
oh, the guy who founded Scientology.
But doing a great job acting up a storm, having lots of fun.
Mm-hmm.
The other best part of this movie is the weird, like porcupine dudes.
Yes,
that look like, okay.
Yes!
Here's the thing: they should be in Return to Oz.
They should be in Return to Oz.
They're Return to Oz characters. Their whole costume design and the way they act, that's something from Return to Oz.
They remind me of the Porcupine Man in that episode of Jim Henson's Storyteller.
Mm.
Yes.
But well,
but he was a beefy, broad Porcupine Man. And these are scrawny Porcupine Men.
They remind me of like what you would do if like suddenly like, oh, the Wicked Witch is no longer messing with like monkeys. We're messing with hedgehogs.
With hedgehogs, yeah.
Because like, my God, were they acting up a storm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They were having a great time. The makeup in this movie, not good. My God, what is that old age? Why also does that man have to speak the way he speaks when he's old? Also, not an attractive man when he does his whole, like, beast thing and, like, turns back into a young man. Doesn't look good.
No.
Don't know why we're all fawning over him.
No?
No.
Because he's a big, dreamy 80s man in 1991. The expiration date has passed.
He looks like he's the stand-in for Fabio
in
a bad way.
Mm.
And Fabio's not good to begin with.
That's what that seagull said.
Also, I was so confused at the beginning. I'm like, why are we, like, Phantom of the Opera in this shit? Like, what's going on? I'm so confused.
You want a Michael Ironside quote about this movie?
Sure.
Yeah, listen, I hated that script. We all did. Me, Sean Connery, Chris, we were all in it for the money on this one. I mean, it read as if it had been written by a 13-year-old boy. But I never played a barbarian swordsman before. This is my first big evil mastermind type. I figured if I was going to do this stupid movie, I might as well have fun and go as far over the top as I possibly could. All that eye rolling and foaming at the mouth was me deciding that if I was going to be in this piece of shit like that movie, I was going to be in the most memorable fucking thing in it. And I think I succeeded.
Yeah, he did. The whole time, I'm like, is that Sean Connery? No, that's not Sean Connery. That's a dude pretending to be Sean Connery. Because Sean Connery wouldn't be in this fucking movie.
Sean Connery's been in a lot of trash. I love every story of Sean Connery, like, passing up on Lord of the Rings, passing up on The Matrix, because he reads the scripts like, I don't get it. It seems like garbage. And then, like, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen comes in front of him, and he's like, I don't get it. It seems like garbage. But the last couple times I said that I was really wrong. I gotta do this one. Whoops.
Oh, man.
He's not good at picking projects. No. The man was in Zardoz. That is not a normal movie. That is a beloved movie. That is not a normal movie.
Yeah. So Michael Ironside did a good job. Glad he got a paycheck. Glad he recognizes it was shit.
Highlander 2, I think, is really interesting as a collection of behind-the-scenes stories. Just, like, look up trivia, look up quotes, all the stories of, like, Sean Connery immediately spending all of the money he got from it on, like, a real estate scam and coming out with nothing on the end. Like, that's just the kind of money, that's just the kind of movie it is. Nothing went right for everyone. They kept, like, hitting each other and themselves with swords and injuring themselves. It was bad. It was a bad time. So, in the original version, for one thing, the big net over the earth is orange. That's a tell.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
They recolored it in the final version. But the scene where they climb through the mountain pass and get over the net and see that she was right, and it's like the hero and heroine's one, like, peaceful, almost romantic moment that sells that they have a relationship at all,
mm-hmm.
wasn't in it.
Okay.
You know how Connor and General Katana have two sword fights, and then there's the one action scene climbing around the truck?
Mm-hmm.
What if those two sword fights were put into one, regardless of the fact that they're in completely different sets and settings?
Yeah.
Also, the truck fight never happens.
You want to know something else when we're going and watching this?
Sure.
Because I've never seen the original one.
Uh-huh.
And I got the name confused with Outlander.
Uh-huh.
So I thought this was the sequel to that TV show that I've never watched, but I, like, vaguely know of.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really confused about, like, how is this connected? Like, I was like, okay, we're watching, like, the original movie that then Outlander was, like, the TV show was made off of, so this is the sequel to the original movie, and it's based... But I thought it was, like, the Scottish Highlands. And, like, okay, it's kind of there, but, like, why are we in the future?
I mean,
it took me a little while to realize they were different things.
I know you hadn't watched the original Highlander,
mm-hmm.
but even if you had, you would not know why the movie is in a dystopian future. Highlander was not. It was set in contemporary 80s America.
You did tell me that when we were watching it. But think
also,
about what we know of Outlander, the TV show, and especially confused I was.
The Doctor Who fanfic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true. That's why he's named Jamie Frazier. It's Jamie, the Second Doctor companion, and Frazier Hines, the guy that played him.
Yeah.
Yeah. The original Highlander 2 was also way more about the alien planet all the immortals came from, and they sidelined as much of that in the final edition as they could.
Yeah.
Including the ending was Connor looking at the feathered-haired 80s lady of 1991 and being like, hey, do you want to be my warrior queen when I take this rebellion back to my alien planet?
She was like, yeah.
And she's like, yeah, we're going to set up a sequel that no one wants because this movie's going to make about $8 gross total. It sucks.
Yeah, it was bad.
It's bad. It's bad. I don't think Michael Ironside is that good in it, even. I did
He's
not
just having a great time.
I did not have that much fun watching him try to have fun in this piece of garbage.
I had fun watching him have fun.
I'll say it again. I loved the train scene, but nothing else matched that. It didn't seem to have intention or thought, and like
there was no intention, but he was having fun.
I've had more fun with similar people playing the same move in equally bad movies. The first Dungeons and Dragons movie, Jeremy Irons does a way better version of what Michael Ironside is trying to do in this movie. This just feels like what the bad guy in Star Hunter would be like if he wasn't strapped into all that garbage.
Ew.
Yeah. Train scene, though. That owns. It's so good. In fact, I took one note while watching this movie.
Yeah.
City design in the footsteps of Dick Tracy and Tim Burton's Batman.
Oh, yeah.
So if you like that, you should watch the first half hour of Highlander 2.
It looks like the great movie ride should just cut through it.
It does. It super does.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we watched that for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you've enjoyed this...
Happy New Year!
Yeah. You know what? You can give us in the new year. Start mm-hmm. this year off right. Can leave us a 5-star rating and review.
Absolutely. The more reviews we get, the more we know we don't have to change everything just because it's a brand new calendar year.
Mm-hmm. You can also tell a friend.
Uh-huh. I really wish you would. I love it when you do.
And you can follow us on Blue Sky at Whiskers, WSKRS. We are there. We have fun. You post a lot.
Uh-huh.
Often it's funny.
Sometimes it's informative.
Sometimes
how about that?
It's informative.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a cute creature.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's like, hey, we're back, bitches.
Yeah. Sometimes it's announcing when, an internet outage and a...
I was sick.
And a cold.
And then
holidays. Holiday obligations, holiday travel, work obligations. They all just fell like dominoes in sequence. And
yes.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where you can find out that stuff. So do those things.
Mm-hmm,
it's great.
Mm-hmm. I have a small plug. I wrote an article.
Oh,
I
yes,
wrote.
Yes,
I wrote my
did.
First piece to be published on one piece published two places, scanlinemedia.com and also MAHQ. That's the Mecha Anime Headquarters. I assume that's what it stands for. About our recent mm-hmm. visit to the second day of operation of Gundam Base Chicago, Bandai's first Gundam Base location in North America and the United States of America. So take that, both Canada and Hawaii. mm-hmm. So we had a good time. And also a frustrating time. And if we went back again tomorrow, one of those would be true. The other would be salt.
Yes.
It was a very, very popular grand opening that led to some logistical issues.
Yeah.
But even if you're not interested in themed shopping in the Chicagoland area, I would like people to read it just because I think there's some good turns of phrases in there. And also it's really underneath it all about, like, what does it mean to be validated by a brand? And what does it say about ourselves that that's one of the most real feelings we can hope for in the world today? Yeah. So that'll be linked in the show notes.
So with that, I'm Lena.
I'm Grant. And in the words of Captain Oliver Hudson,
you're stubborn ass, Elaine.